This morning we'll be continuing where we left off yesterday evening, chapter 9 of Canto 7. And then we'll complete the chapter. It ends with text 55. And then we'll go on to the first 10 verses of chapter 10. It's a very important section, the chapter 10 particularly, and what comes at the end of chapter 9 is important to hear it because it leads into chapter 10. So, those of you that have been with us for the duration most probably noticed that the teachings section lays foundation for the prayer section. The teachings, three different groups, his friends, the students, his teachers, and Hiranyakashipu, king of the demons. And his teachings were consistent. They were, at least it seemed to me, appreciating their sequential. And one building upon the other, building upon the other. Very foundational teachings for understanding bhakti. How to go from dark places to pure devotional service. Those were in the teachings and then in the prayers, similarly, a number of points, without reviewing those number of points, very important points of how to do the same thing. The audience was different in the case of his friends, it was peers, in the case of, but he was taking the role like a teacher or guru to his friends. Having heard from Narada, he's repeating what Narada said and inviting them to have proper regard for the message of Narada Muni, the message of pure devotional service. The teacher is different, his father different. Now it's the Supreme Lord, the worshipable object of his devotion. The message doesn't change. The mode of speaking becomes appropriate for who he's speaking to. Many, many things. So without reviewing those many, many things, we heard so many times now, Prahlad was sent, it's in the early part of chapter 10, he was sent by the personality of Godhead. He says to Lord Nrisimhadeva, you sent me to this world because of this influence of the modes of nature bewildering people. You sent me to teach the way of and show by example of devotional service to get relief and release from the bondage of material existence. So that's what he's doing. There are different options out there. People that don't know about devotional service or they prefer something other than devotional service. Out in the spiritual marketplace, there's other things. And so he's going to address some of that just coming up this morning. So I'll start. Listen with the purpose in mind that the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, wants people of this world, that's us included, to understand the way of pure devotional service. It's Kali Yuga when Prahlad appeared. It was Satya Yuga, and things have gotten deteriorated even in the course of my short lifetime. Whew. And any one of us says the same thing. And generation after generation, it's the same thing. Wow, it's really getting dark. And it gets darker and darker. So, but the principles that are spoken about, even in Satya Yoga, they don't change. And the means of deliverance doesn't change. So here with that mindset or lens, hearing capacity, this is meant for us to become relieved of material existence, the pangs of material existence. Shishi Radha Shama Sundara Jai. It's not information. It is information, but it's not simply information. It's transformation. So here we go. We ended with verse 42. And if you remember the previous slide, it was the same as the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the mood of being the servant of the servants. Because the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, is Bhaktivatsala. He's very kind and affectionate to his devotees. So if you become dear to the devotee, you become dear to the Lord. We all know this message from the Puranas when Parvati asks Lord Shiva, who is the best of worshippers? Those who worship Lord Vishnu is best. And even better than the best is those who are servants of the devotees who worship Lord Vishnu. They're the best. Lord Chaitanya's teachings and the Bhagavatam's teachings are identical. We've said this multiple times, and we'll see some additional references as we go along here. Okay, so some emphasis here, because he's teaching about bhakti, Prahlad, and when teaching about something, you compare to other somethings. I learned this from Bhujan in his Art of Teaching class. It's a technique of teaching called compare and contrast. In case you're not a teacher, it's a method of teaching. You want to say what something is. So to help someone understand what that something is, you say, here's some other things that may look to be the same, but they're different in the following ways, and there's these special features over here. Compare and contrast. It's to get discernment or discrimination between one thing and another thing. Otherwise, it's a blur. It's a teaching technique, and he's doing that in this section. I didn't include the Sanskrit, but here's a section. Tvadvirya Gayana Mahamrita Magnachittaha. I included this because Prabhupada liked to quote it. Tvadvirya Gavana Mahamrita Magnachitta. Wherever I stay, I'm fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. Chitta, consciousness. Magna chitta. So, fully absorbed in Mahamrita, your glories and activities. I don't need anything. I'm not in a difficulty in this dark place. Because I just think of you. And when I think of you, their shelter because that connection is there. The position of safety is there, even in this dark place. So I don't require anything. Even when there's great danger, he refers to this later in this section. He was saved in so many ways, pushed off a cliff, and Lord Vishnu caught him. I like this. One of our acharyas comments, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, when he was pushed off a cliff, Lord Vishnu didn't show himself right away. He wanted to see, what's he going to do? Is he going to scream? Is he going to cry? Or is he going to think of me? And it is said, he didn't scream, he didn't cry. He knew the Supreme Lord would protect him. And the Supreme Lord showed himself at the last moment and caught him. Now, why did he do that? Why did he risk getting Prahlad's care? He wanted to show. And we'll hear as we go along. He wanted to show the way of pure devotional service. Prahlad is such a personality. Completely fearless, completely fixed in transcendence, even in great danger. And it's one of the 9 processes of devotional service. Just think of him, Manmana. Of course, he was doing many other things besides Manmana. He wasn't off in the forest doing meditation. Then, in contrast, this is the compare and contrast, there are those that don't take shelter of the Supreme Lord, and as a result, they're very involved with material nature, completely, completely controlled by the 3 modes of material nature. So Prahlad continues, my concern is only for the fools and rascals, strong language, who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I am simply concerned with love for them. There was a little discussion with a newer member the other day. Prabhupada, why does he use this fools and rascals language? It's like, can't he say something softer? Like, you know, confused or misguided or weak in their intelligence or something that's a little rascals. So I made reference to this. Here's Prahlad saying he has love for these persons. He's not condemning the persons. He has love for the persons. But the behavior is very foolish. And mudha, it has stronger language, ass, or rascal, or foolish. We'll hear it again, but please understand when he speak like this, it's not judging and condemning the individuals of this world. He's feeling love for them, but the behavior, the choices they're making, it's really bad. We've heard so many, what the consequences of those choices they're making for them and for the world around them. So in the world, it's a world of darkness. And I am simply concerned with love for them. In this same verse, there's this nice Maya Sukhaya, those that have heard Prabhupada's recorded lectures. This is the verse where that comes from. Maya means illusion, and Sukha means happiness. So he would say the Maya Sukhaya civilization, where the civilization that's chasing after illusory happiness, Maya Sukhaya, striving to make this unnatural habitat our personal home, forgetting one's real self in finding comfort in this world is the most dangerous way of life. This is Prabhupada's purport. Maya Sukhaya Bharam. And the whole civilization, it's not a remote, isolated person here and there. The whole civilization has that foundation, having forgotten the purpose of life. Throughout the entire world, everyone is making big, big plans to adjust the miseries of the material world. And this is true at present, in the past, and in the future. Nonetheless, although they make elaborate political, social, and cultural plans, they have all been described herein as vimudha, fools. So he's just using the word that's Prahlad's word. It's in Bhagavad Gita also. Avajananti mam mudha manushyam tanamarshatram. Those persons who think that Krishna, when he appears, has assumed a material form, they're mudha. Krishna says. Prahlad says. Now, it's not Krishna's judging, or Prahlad is judging. They have affection for these persons. They're just deluded and acting in hurtful ways for themselves and others. And this is vimudha. Very foolish. And that's the materialistic civilization. Chasing after maya sukha or illusory happiness. The next verse. My dear Lord Nrisimhadev, I see that there are many saintly persons, indeed, but they are interested only in their own deliverance, not caring for the big cities and towns. They go to the Himalayas or the forest to meditate with vows of silence. They are not interested in delivering others. So this is the compassion message. But as far as Prahlad is concerned, I do not wish to be liberated alone. Again, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to shelter at your lotus feet. He wants their happiness. He wants the deliverance from their misery. He has affection and feeling for them. I don't want to be delivered alone. That's not that Lord Nrisimhadev said, you only and the other people can rot. It's not saying that. But it's Prahlad speaking about the other part and parcel living entities who made foolish choices, but, and including his father, we'll hear later today. Even his father, who did so many bad things to Prahlad and to others, he wants his deliverance. Doesn't hold a grudge. He's going to get his. No. One of the presentations I make at universities is on the topic of compassion for those of you that are doing some Western outreach. It might help you to know that something that is of interest to young Western people is character, like compassion. And other things like that. So it's a popular notion. And One of the slides in that presentation is a quote from, of all people, Albert Einstein. No, Albert Einstein isn't known for compassion. He's known for other things. But he explains how that freedom of thought was made possible for him. Here's his quote. Our task must be to free ourselves by widening our circle of compassion, to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature and its beauty. The souls and material nature, the entire creation. Now, who can think like that? But if you want freedom of thought, if you want to be capable of having good intelligence, we've been hearing this from the earlier sessions, pragya, pragya pratishta, or stitta pragya, having good intelligence, alpametasam, is the opposite, small intelligence. To have intelligence expand, it needs freedom. And that freedom is compassion. So it's a natural characteristic of bhakti. One naturally is feeling compassion for all, in a very advanced or elevated stage, all living entities and all of material nature. That's vast. And it's not notional, it's not something that comes and it goes, because there's shelter in the personality of Godhead for a devotee. Now, those who are not devotees, they don't understand the devotee. The karmis, they try for happiness by material adjustment, exactly what's in the verse. And the gyanis, they want to be happy by becoming one with the Supreme. Leave it all behind to become liberated, become one with the Supreme. But the devotees don't want either. We heard that earlier, bhukti or mukti. Rather, the devotee has no such interest. He's not interested in so-called meditation in the Himalayas or the forest. Rather, his interest is in the busiest parts of the world, where he teaches people Krishna consciousness. The Krishna consciousness movement was started for this purpose. Now, it doesn't mean we don't have farms. We have farms. We want to have more farms. The purpose is part of the mission of showing by example. Here's how to live simply. Here's our teachings. We're in the city doing something, living in lifestyle that's may not show people what simple living, high thinking is. It looks like everybody else is doing externally. So, the Krishna consciousness movement has this purpose. Isn't it a nice quote and a nice photograph? Prabhupada saying in a letter, anyway, I'm not after respectful compliments by the public. I'm concerned more about my disciples. I want to see them quite able to preach this sublime doctrine of Krishna consciousness, and therefore I wish to stay. Otherwise, I'm not attracted for any place, either hell or heaven. 1968. Compassion. Bhakti, particularly pure bhakti, has this very elevated standard of compassion. Then we heard this little bit, this compare-contrast thing of Adanta Gobir Vishatam Tamishram Punak Punash Charvata Charvananam. We discussed that verse. Matir Nakrishne, that one. So Adanta Gobir is, go means senses. Adanta Gobir, uncontrolled senses. In order to be effective at anything, to be good in school, to be good in your career, to be good at family life, to be good in anything, to be good, to be effective, you have to control the senses. And it starts with controlling the mind and then control the senses. So he discusses this effective sense control, and it has a goal or purpose, the purpose of human life, attaining release from material existence. And he points to bhakti once again. It's a bhakti message. Material happiness, one of the favorite activities of material happiness is sex life. And he points out that this sex life eventually ends up in distress. And those who are misers, they don't acknowledge the distress that continues again and again pursuing material happiness through sense enjoyment. And the contrast is those who are sober or dhira tolerate the itching sensation of sex attraction and are not subjected to the sufferings. Often Prabhupada would speak, so here's a little image. It's when you scratch something that itches, it doesn't make the irritation go away. It aggravates the cause of the itch. He often used this expression, the camel likes thorns, thorny twigs. I saw it in Rajasthan. Big camel, after carrying a big load, was tied by a rope to a tree that had thorns, because that's what they like, trees with thorns. And they got, you know, their long necks are chewing on the thorns. And, you know, coming down the corner of his mouth was blood, because the thorn cuts his tongue, and he likes the taste of blood, so he keeps chewing the thorns. That's his, you know, favorite meal. And similarly, without getting too graphic, the act of sex is a transformation of blood. And it's just one is experiencing release of one's own blood through thinking happiness. Jamunacharya, again Prabhupada would often quote Jamunacharya, great acharya from the Sri Sampradaya. Since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought, and my lips curl with distaste. Jamunacharya, before he became an acharya, was involved as a king with queens, and or at least a queen, and indulging in sex life and in family life. And so then when he became an acharya, thought of those previous activities would come to his mind, and he found those thoughts distasteful, particularly in contrast to the happiness of shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, now this is another compare-contrast, there are 10 prescribed methods on the path of liberation. He details I didn't include it. It's a long list, 10 things. There are things that are beneficial to help one go towards liberation. Then his comment, these different methods for liberation are generally only a professional practice and means of livelihood for those who have not conquered their senses. The Sanskrit word is ajitendriya. Ajitendriya. They want to control their senses. They want liberation. They can't get liberation without controlling their senses, so these are for people who can't control their senses. However, doing these austerities and other things, it makes them proud without becoming necessarily successful of controlling their senses. To a degree, yes, certainly. But ultimately, no. This is an image on the left of someone doing meditation upon a candle. We've done this at mantra meditation workshops, methods of fixing the mind. So it's a method of fixing the mind. It's mechanical. There's some effectiveness, but of controlling the mind. At least while you're looking at the candle, your senses are a little more controlled. But the effect is limited. And as far as the soul is concerned, it doesn't deal with the satisfaction of the spiritual senses of the soul. But then over on the right side, there is a devotee engaged in mantra meditation, and he's getting mercy from Krishna because he's calling Krishna's name. So there's connection, there's reciprocation with Krishna. And Krishna is unlimited, so the benefit is, in principle, unlimited. Just have to make that connection strong. So that's the preferred, much preferred method of effective sense control. Prabhupada writes, only a rare person who has adopted complete, unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. This is a paraphrasing of a message from Canto 6, Chapter 1, text number 15. Many of you are aware of the verse. You may not know the number. Chetit kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham dunvanti karsneya viharam iva bhaskaram. It's a response. Shukadeva Goswami speaks it. It's a response to a question of Maharaj Parikshit that comes after hearing fifth canto. And the end of fifth canto is the structure of the universe. And the end of that discussion is the lower planetary regions within the universe, and it's filled with suffering. So the beginning of canto 6 is how to help people that have done sinful activities become free from the actions of those sinful activities. It's a core theistic question. So he doesn't say this religion, that religion. He says principles. And finally ends up with bhakti is the other methods, karma and gyan, are ineffective. Beneficial to a degree, but ineffective. And bhakti alone can uproot the desire, even the propensity to do sinful activity. What to speak of neutralizing the results. Kevalaya bhaktya, that's the verse, 6:1:15. You note takers might want to look at verse up, it's a nice one. If one simply engages in devotional service to the Lord, all 10 methods of liberation are automatically observed. Just like if you're on the top rung of a ladder, it's the benefit to be derived by all the lower rungs is already there. You don't have to do all those things if you're on the top rung. Prahlad proposal that the process of bhakti should be recommended even for the Ajitendriya, those who cannot conquer the senses. But the devotees, by the very nature of bhakti, the senses become controlled. They're for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. Tat parkvena nirmalam. So we're closing in on completing the chapter. The next three verses are dealing with those who cultivate knowledge. Those who cultivate knowledge are encouraged to see behind the creation. There's the cause. And there's an inseparable relationship between the cause and the effect of the cause. That's this oneness position. Because the energy of creation is Krishna's energy. They're inseparable. And those who are wise and understand this, they engage themselves with the material energy in practical service to Krishna. It's a repeat of something we heard earlier, this oneness and difference message. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Within the objects, the effects that create the cosmic manifestation, the cause is there. Same message as we heard before. Within the seed is the tree. It's not matured yet, but within the seed is the tree. And within the tree, there's seeds. So there's an inseparable relationship between the cause and the effect. Although they're different. The seed is not the tree, and the tree is not the seed. They are but energies of the source. And this is the last verse where Prahlad is, in this chapter, where Prahlad is offering prayers. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, the best of all persons, to whom prayers are offered, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you because, without rendering six kinds of devotional service unto you, he lists them. We have a list of nine. This is a list of six, and it's just fine. There's different ways of looking at devotional service. Who can achieve that which is meant for the Paramahamsas? What does Paramahamsa mean? It means the topmost stage of living for the Supreme Lord with detachment from the temporary. So his sights are very high. He already is a Paramahamsa. And he's very interested in devotional service. He's not interested in other things and other shelters. He's very clear why, very fixed and focused. So I'm offering my respectful obeisances and prayers unto you. It's one of the processes of devotional service, offering prayers. And that's it for this chapter. And the person who is narrating all of this is Narada, if you remember. The whole canto is Narada speaking, and he's speaking to Yudhisthira. We discussed this. So he's saying to Yudhisthira, thus Lord Nrsingadev was pacified because there was the request by the demigods to calm his anger down with your prayer, so he was pacified. And the position from which he offered the prayers was a fully transcendental position, in part because that's his quality, but when the Lord placed his hand upon his head, he became ecstatic and filled with Brahma again, transcendental knowledge, and that was the position from which he was speaking. So the Lord gave up his anger. Actually, it was long ago. And being very kind to Prahlad, he spoke. Prahlad is in this humble position, hands folded before the Lord. And then the Lord speaks. So this is how the chapter ends. The Lord speaks. So here's his four verses of speaking. My dear Prahlad, most gentle one, best of the family of Asuras, all good fortune unto you. I am very much pleased with you. Like, that's perfection. It's my pastime to fulfill the desires of all living beings, and therefore you may ask from me any benediction that you desire to be fulfilled. Now, he's a pure devotee, so he doesn't have material desires. But the implication you'll hear from his response is it's an opportunity at least, an enticement at least, to get a new computer. Maybe, you know, BMW or, you know, something. Get money or get fame or get something, an object of this world. If those desires were in his heart, maybe it's like the desire tree example, the Kalpa Vriksha example. Be careful when you find a Kalpa Vriksha tree, what's in your heart, because it's going to happen. My dear Prahlad, so here's a benediction we didn't even ask for. May you live a long time. One cannot appreciate or understand me without pleasing me, which he said in the previous verse he's already done. But one who has seen or pleased me has nothing more for which to lament for his own satisfaction. There's no hankering. No sochati, no kangsati. No hankering, no lamenting. No hankering, no lamenting. Fully satisfied. That contact with Lord Nrisimhadeva or contact with Lord Vishnu or Krishna, that's it. That's this. We heard in Prahlad's teachings, this ecstatic bliss leaves behind any kind of other thing. So there's no lamentation, there's no hankering. We may be cultivating like that, but the way to cultivate like that is through the method of devotional service. My dear Prahlad, this is the next to the last verse in the whole chapter. You are very fortunate. Please know that from me, those who are very wise and highly elevated try to please me in all different modes of mellows, for I am the only person who can fill all the desires of everyone. That's Lord Nrisimhadeva's words to Prahlad. Then Narada concludes the chapter. Prahlad Maharaj was the best person in the family of Asuras, always aspire for material happiness. Nonetheless, although allured by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who offered him all benedictions for material happiness, it didn't specify material happiness, but that's on the menu list. Because of his unalloyed Krishna consciousness, he did not want to take any material benefit for sense gratification. And that's the end of the chapter. So what I'm going to do next is we're going to go to the first 10 verses of chapter 10. And I'm not going to, we'll go revisit them after breakfast because they're very powerful, very important. But we'll hear them and make a few comments. One other point. This message in this slide is the same as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message. Natanam Najanam Nasundari, etc. I don't want something material. What do you want? Causeless devotional service. The translation Prabhupada presents, service to the servant of your servant. Same. Causeless devotional service. Without any birth after birth, without wanting liberation, without wanting something, anything temporary. Just devotional service. Same message. Lord Chaitanya's teachings and Srimad Bhagavatam's teachings are the same. And since Srimad Bhagavatam's teachings are the best, according to the Vedas themselves, that makes Lord Chaitanya's teachings the best. Very logical. Okay, so I'm going to now go to chapter 10. And this is with recorded sound, but we took the timing out, and so it's hopefully it's going to work properly.
The saint Narad Muni continued, although Prahlad Maharaj was only a boy, when he heard the benedictions offered by Lord Narasimhadev, he considered them impediments on the path of devotional service. Thus, he smiled very mildly and spoke as follows. Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because I was born in an atheistic family, I'm naturally attached to material enjoyment. Therefore, kindly do not tempt me with these illusions. I'm very much afraid of material conditions, and I desire to be liberated from materialistic life. It is for this reason that I have taken shelter of your lotus feet." Oh, my worshipable Lord, because the seed of lusty desires, which is the root cause of material existence, is within the core of everyone's heart, you have sent me to this material world to exhibit the symptoms of a pure devotee. Otherwise, O my Lord, O Supreme Instructor of the entire world, you are so kind to your devotee that you could not induce him to do something unbeneficial for him. On the other hand, one who desires some material benefit in exchange for devotional service cannot be a pure devotee. Indeed, he is no better than a merchant who wants profit in exchange for service. A servant who desires material profits from his master is certainly not a qualified servant or pure devotee. Similarly, a master who bestows benedictions upon his servant because of a desire to maintain a prestigious position as master is also not a pure master. Oh, my Lord, I am your unmotivated servant, and you are my eternal master. There is no need of our being anything other than master and servant. You are naturally my master, and I am naturally your servant. We have no other relationship. My Lord, best of the givers of benediction, if you at all want to bestow a desirable benediction upon me, then I pray from your Lordship that within the core of my heart there be no material desires. Oh, my Lord, because of lusty desires from the very beginning of one's birth, the functions of one's senses, mind, life, body, religion, patience, intelligence, shyness, opulence, strength, memory, and truthfulness are vanquished. Oh, my Lord, when a human being is able to give up all the material desires in his mind, he becomes eligible to possess wealth and opulence like yours. Oh, my Lord, full of six opulences, O Supreme Person, O Supreme Soul, killer of all miseries, O Supreme Person in the form of a wonderful lion and man, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you.
we'll go back and do a little review and then revisit this section, wonderful section, again after breakfast. Prahlad saw the exchange that he just had with Lord Nrsingadev as a test. Here's a little Prabhupada explanation. Not specifically in relation to this, but when someone is trying to become Krishna's devotee, and they pray to Krishna and engage in service to Krishna with the aspiration to become situated like that, fixed in devotional service, Prabhupada said, Krishna will examine the devotee. Oh? You want to become my devotee? What about a little sense enjoyment, hmm? And then the devotee says, Prabhupada went like this, no, I only want you. You only want me. What about a little difficulty, And the devotee says, whatever you wish to give me, I accept. I simply want you. Oh. He really wants me. Then I'll give myself to him. Now, there's certainly a willingness. It's not unwillingness. At the same time, there's no fallibility. Avyayam, we heard this from Queen Kunti's prayers. Maya avaranika. The curtain of Maya covers our vision of Krishna because we want Maya. You know, we want the kingdom of God without God. We want our cake and eat it too. We want a relationship with Krishna with sense gratification. We want the mix. That's in the neophyte stage. It's not bad or embarrassing. It's just, that's our condition. It's the stage of where we are. So Krishna will examine, or Krishna will give us an opportunity to have some objects of the senses and see how we'll engage with those objects of the senses. Maybe good education. Maybe wealth. Maybe beauty. Maybe born in a good family. And then see what happens. When Krishna sees we can handle those situations, he can then freely give us more and freely give us more and freely give us more. Lord Chaitanya spoke like this about Rupa Goswami. To Srup Damodar. Yes, it's true. I gave him my full mercy. I saw him as a fit candidate to receive bhakti. And so I gave him my full mercy. That's a big load of mercy. Even more merciful than Krishna. I gave him my full mercy. Now you please also instruct him in the ways of devotional service. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted him, this qualified, now mercy-laden person, to expand and write books on the teachings of bhakti. So he did, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But the vessel was his heart. carrying all that mercy and then following the instruction, write books, expand this knowledge, expand the teachings, and empowered him to realize everything because of his inclination to have nothing else but one shelter. So when Krishna gives us something, whatever that something is, and we show Krishna, not like cosmetic, but genuinely we show Krishna, I only want to engage in your service. This thing, this facility or resource or something or other, is meant for Krishna's pleasure. It's meant for your pleasure. This can be a relationship. It can be wealth. It can be whatever it might be. I only want to use this in service to Krishna. Engage with this in service to Krishna. It's all yours. It's for your pleasure. So that consciousness, it's for Krishna's pleasure, then one doesn't see something material as an impediment. But Prahlad is humble. He's thinking of himself vulnerable to becoming deluded. He's not. But he's thinking of himself like that. We discussed this. We're running out of time. We discussed this earlier. One of the very wonderful pastimes and Krishna's pastimes in this world was with Sudama Brahman. There was Sudama the florist also. Two Sudamas. And cowherd boyfriend also named Sudama. But Sudama Brahman, his mentality, his spirit was, I don't want anything. Because if I get something, I'll become proud. And so he lived a life of abject poverty. It wasn't because he had to. You have to live in abject poverty or you're not a good devotee. It was just him in his mood of love for Krishna. He hardly ate anything. His body was just skin and bones. He only had one cloth. And there was no items, edibles in the house because he was so poor. And his wife, according to the commentary, his wife was like him. She wasn't, you know, whining and complaining. Get out and get a job. What's wrong with you? But, you know, the mentality was different. Excuse me, was alike. So she was very happy with that lifestyle. And not everybody is meant for that lifestyle, but in her case, it was fine. Except one thing. She couldn't stand to see her skinny husband so skinny and have nothing to eat and one piece of cloth. And, you know, what happens when you have to wash the one piece of cloth? And her mind was disturbed because of that. Anyway, so then the rest of the pastime unfolds. But therefore, it was very reluctantly he went to ask Krishna for something. But he didn't even ask Krishna for something. And when he came back, he got that something. But his relationship with Krishna was not to be an enjoyer of something. With caution, like Prahlad's caution, it's an entanglement. It's an obstacle. It's an impediment. No, it ends up, he got the whole shebang. He got all the kingdom of his father and all of its opulence. And he didn't become disturbed by it. It didn't become an impediment, but the risk is there. Same with Sudama. He got everything. And then some. But he didn't become disturbed. It says specifically, he continued to sleep on the floor and although there were big palatial this and that's, he wasn't indulging in those things because it's just, he was of that same cautious nature. Now Prahlad became the king. Well, here, he ruled for the duration of one whole manu, but he got the benediction, you won't become deluded by these things, and you'll be supported. These are benedictions that finally ended up being given. You'll be supported by opportunities for association with devotees, and the opportunity to hear from the devotees, although you'll be the king of the demons. You can be a full-on devotee. That's the benediction. Then you come back to me. We heard him already in his prayers. When will that opportunity come that you can take me back with you and be at your lotus feet? So he was at his lotus feet in this world, serving in that mood, because that was Lord Nrisingadev's desire. And so that's what he did, what Lord Nrisingadev's desire was. But it wasn't, totally absent was the hankering for material objects to be the enjoyer of. Oh great, I've got this benediction. Let's see. What do I need? What would I want? Nothing. So we'll continue with this after breakfast. It's a very important section, and then we'll carry on with the next little section too. Do we have a microphone back there? A portable microphone? See if there's any comments or questions, anybody?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. towards the Nasochiti Nakangshiti, being as in a practical world, towards the yesterday's questions and today's lecture as well, as we progress in the devotional service, we are pulled in different directions. We are having some expectations from our responsibilities, and towards that we will knowingly and unknowingly will be doing the offenses, but inside the intention will be nasochiti nakangshiti again. Wonderful prayers from Prahlad. With that, keeping in mind, we don't know whether even after this class, let us say after a month, two, we will be into this mode, but again we will be doing that kind of offenses, unknowingly or unknowingly as well. How to deal with this situation? It is unintentional, right?
Could you explain that nasochiti nakangsati connection with knowingly or unknowingly making offenses? It seems like two different questions. Is it two different questions?
Is that there are two different questions?
Okay. Yeah. There's the standard of pure devotion, and there's where we are. We're not at that standard. We have that goal as the standard of what our goal is. And then there's where we are. And the big gap between where we are and what we know is the goal. The Brahma-Bhuta platform from which bhakti is performed is Nisarchiti Nikangsati. We're rendering devotional service, but we have hankering and we have lamenting. We're not at that topmost standard, but we're still doing devotional service. And so, and devotional service is from the spiritual platform. Therefore, chapter 29 of Canto 3, Devahuti asks, bhakti is pure, got it. And we're involved with the modes of nature. Can bhakti be mixed with the modes of nature? The answer is yes. This mode, that mode, the other mode, and then pure. Free from the modes. And devotional service in this mode looks like this. Devotional service in that mode looks like that. So from wherever we are, we should cultivate, go the next step. And if we're cultivating go the next step and relying upon Krishna, not just making some effort on our own power, relying the other part of the bhakti, then we can get there to that next step and then pure devotion where there's no hankering and no lamenting. Bhakti has that power to carry us there. So we have to act according to the reality of our situation. Say it negatively. If we try to imitate or artificially live according to which is not our position, it's not sustainable. So something that we can discuss after breakfast is more on this. I sent you a document to be printed. It's Canto 11, chapter 20, I think, verses 27-28, where this is Uddhava, Gita, Krishna speaking to Uddhava, speaking about, paraphrase what the text says, but we can discuss it more when I have the exact language and the commentaries. It's an important consideration. A devotee, Krishna speaking, a devotee that has come to the position of faith, but I'm not there yet. What my faith is, the goal is like this, but I'm down here and I still have some hankering and lamenting. I still have some attraction for being the enjoyer of the temporary. Krishna directly addresses it and then says what to do. Such a devotee, recognizing that acting as the enjoyer of the temporary is going to bring misery. He knows it because he has this knowledge, but he also has some affinity for matter. So he carries on, knowing his suffering will come, and suffering comes, sure enough, because the suffering is meant, that suffering is meant to help detach one from the mood of being the enjoyer of the temporary. That's the Krishna-given purpose behind it. But continues with faith, let me progress towards the goal. Faith with devotion to Krishna and the purity of bhakti. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, not making reference to that verse, but says the same thing in different language. He describes this, the stages of elevation of consciousness and then identifies that one can be Maharaj. Maharaj? Could you mute that? Can you mute the phone? Mute the phone, please. Thank you. You can show darshan, but mute the phone. Where was I? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, yes. He describes the yoga ladder, and one can be identified according to one's position unless he's progressive. And if he's not progressive, then he's, that's type of, you know, in the yoga ladder. But every devotee, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's instruction, every devotee should recognize what their position is and be striving for the next position. Be progressive to move forward. And if one isn't progressive to move forward, one isn't going to move forward. But take shelter of the right principle of how to move forward, knowing what the structure is. Same, be honest with who you are, where you are. Serve accordingly. Know that there's misery involved in, you know, attachment. It's not the temporary itself, it's attachment to the temporary in the enjoyer mood. And suffering comes, sure enough. But I want to become qualified to be in the next level, the next level, the next level. Then, you know, there's more on that, but we'll cover it after breakfast. Now, the offenses, knowingly, unknowingly, what to do about it. There's this elaborate section in Bhakti Sandarbha. I can send it to you. Bhanu Swami's translation. Jiva Goswami addresses this. And it's quite similar to this other explanation. But bhakti is blocked. The power of bhakti is blocked by the consequence of offense. That's anarthas in the heart. The anarthas in the heart result in, are the result of offenses. And they block the power of bhakti. We don't get the full benefit of bhakti because of those unknowing or unknowing offenses. That's the circumstance and what to do. We carry on with bhakti, striving to avoid the offenses. The metaphor that's used sometimes is the clouds block the power of the sun, but the sun is the source of the clouds. The sun shining on the oceans and lakes and rivers evaporates water and it forms the clouds. The sun is the cause of the clouds, and the sun can also dissipate the clouds. Therefore, we engage in bhakti for a prolonged period of time, knowing that just one name is sufficient to deliver us from material existence. But we have these things. We're not getting the full power of the bhakti because of the offenses and the consequence of those offenses. And we continue doing more, knowingly or unknowingly, where the clouds are getting thicker. Now, some of them, because of bhakti, are being dissipated, but some of them are getting thicker because we're doing more. So we avoid the offenses and continue with bhakti prayerfully, like Prahlad's prayers. Please take from my heart, this is on the hankering, lamenting, any desire for material facility, for enjoyment purpose. Please free from my heart the tendency to be offensive. We make effort and we pray for mercy. And if we don't do that, then it's not namabhas anymore. It's namaparat. We're just deepening the darkness. But the Abbas is the clearing stage where it's striving and calling for help. That's our task. That's what to do. Learn the science, how it works, knowledge. Knowledge alone isn't enough, but knowledge helps us get the lay of the land and the territory and the terrain and, you know, whether to turn left or right, how to get to where we want to go, and what are the obstacles along the way. And with that knowledge, go back to the execution of bhakti with proper cultivation, under guidance, you know, in here again and again and again. Again and again and again and again and again. That way we're associating with such persons like Prahlad who are already there, but teaching us how to get there. Srimad Bhagavatam in the holy name. And associate with such persons who are giving these teachings. Okay, we're supposed to end at 9:15. I think I'm going to stop there. Unless somebody has a really short question. You have a short one? Okay. Microphone. Put your hand up.
Maharaj, we see that even pure devotees like Prahlad Maharaj pray to the Lord to protect their devotional service from the material energy. And when I think of myself, who is constantly bombarded with so many distractions.
Constantly bombarded, what you said?
Yeah. How can I not feel discouraged or overwhelmed from all these distractions?
Distractions.
Yeah.
How to not feel overwhelmed because when I'm being bombarded by distractions. That's your question. We're overwhelmed feeling arises when there's no shelter. When there's shelter, you turn to the shelter. And then it may be overwhelming, but you're not feeling overwhelmed because you have shelter. And you're in the same material world that the rest of us are in, and the same opportunities for feeling overwhelmed or being, you know, overwhelming circumstances coming our way, it's true for every one of us. So the wise person takes shelter, and take shelter includes many things, not just non-measurable things, you know, measurable things. Direct the mind and senses towards pleasing Krishna. And I'm feeling overwhelmed. It's hard to, you strive anyway. And just by striving anyway, there's shelter. There's the impact of the spiritual energy acting in your life. I feel, wow. And if as you cultivate that, it becomes your life. And you slacken, then this overwhelming thing, feeling comes. So don't slacken. Krishna's shelter is there. Each one of us has, each one of us that's less than pure in devotion has our thing that Maya knows what our weakness is. And she'll send our way stuff that's where our weakness is. Someone was sharing with me in the course of this seminar what their weakness is. Da 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 da. What do I do? It's a different expression, same question. And one of the answers that I gave her was, just like a child, is feeling, looking to, they don't have to say anything, they have to cry, they just look to their mother or father. Go like that. That's what you do. Shelter, seek shelter. Literally, figuratively, or combination. And feel that position of protection. Now, however long a child may stay in the arms of mother and father depends on the child. In some cases, it's just like reassurance, and in 30 seconds, they're wiggling and want to get down and run around again. But they want that reassurance of safety. So, do that. And select for yourself, or with combination of those who are helping to guide you, what's of those things that you feel overwhelming, what's something that's doable for you to like keep control of your mind and senses when this object or this circumstance comes along? And work on it. Doable one. And do it for some time and then celebrate. Hey! Then think of another one. Don't go, you know, the whole list, because then you won't do anything. Something that's doable. And you'll feel empowered and protected and, you know, accepted by Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches like this also, what I'm saying. Because if you become successful in one thing, that success spills over into other things because it's empowerment. And that which is overwhelming in so many areas becomes diminished just by being successful in one area. The empowerment factor. The shelter and safety factor. Okay, we're going to end. Srila Prabhupada ki, Prahlad Maharaj ki, Gaur Premanandi.